Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jules Gill, I'm going to do an actual introduction, but by virtue of saying this, it's not an actual introduction, but this is the Entitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the UBP,
UBP,
the UBP. I am Scott Tilford. You are Jules Gill.
I am indeed.
It is lovely to see you. And so for the Entitled Banter podcast, we always put out a Twitter question
yeah.
Asking people whatever they would like us to talk about and various gaming topics or whatever else is going on in the industry, which is to say very little's going on in the industry right now.
Yeah, a bit of a dry spell, games, isn't it?
Bit of a malaise. Just shot a video that'll be going out, I think, this afternoon, Friday's when we're recording this on the channel, about the overall malaise feeling and the fact that nearly every third party dev and some of the first party devs are reporting massive losses in revenue and massive losses in player numbers and everything else. A lot of it is because of how much that stuff spiked in the pandemic.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, you're kind of weighing it up against an unfair metric. There's like this weird sort of thing that you'll see in some industries. It's like, oh, we're losing money. It's like, yes, because we can go outside now. Are you unhappy that we have our personal freedoms back? I'm sorry that we're inconveniencing you and your wallet, my friend.
That's the thing. They had this insane sales spike across the last couple of years, which is now going away. And like, I think it's an interesting talking point in terms of the millions of people that signed up for the service aren't sticking around. I think that's kind of interesting. That like the offering right now, like I said, there's a general malaise feeling because there's not that many big releases and it didn't keep people.
There's also like obviously the cost of living increase that's coming in, especially in the UK at the moment. People are looking at what they're subscribing to and being like, oh, I actually have to decide now which one rather than just having every single option open to me. And it's totally. There's a lot of people who do streaming have been noticing it as well. They've just been like, oh, I've seen a massive drop off in my subscriber count or my members or whatever. And it's like, well, people are going back to work now. They're not able to spend like work from home, like spend hours watching Twitch streams and stuff like that. So obviously donations are going to go down as a result. And it's like, I can understand that it's very scary for those people in that career. But at the same time, entering in when something is a boom, you've got to expect the bust. And it's like, it just shows that sometimes it's not that sustainable.
True. I think it's hard as well because the amount of monthly services that there are, like loads of people signed up for all sorts of different things, whether it's Paramount Plus, Disney Plus, whatever, the new PlayStation Plus tiers, and you don't realize how much that stuff stacks up. And if you're trimming off the fat or trimming off the stuff you don't need, then the massive array of monthly services are going to be one of the first things to go to get rid of that stuff. I just got rid of Disney Plus and then the new Predator movie's out today and I was like, I'm going to have to get it back now, but only for like a week or something. I don't want it really. I don't care about Marvel and Star Wars anymore. Anyway, we have a ton of questions to get through. First one from Hugo Brandeo, who says, simple question, Sony in Brazil, WTF. Now, this is in reference to some comments that came from Sony at one of their publishing reports, sorry, one of their financial reports, talking about the ongoing deal that Xbox / Microsoft are acquiring Activision Blizzard and how if they got a hold of the Call of Duty IP, what a big deal that would be. And so it's weird because Sony said, despite large budgets and resources, no other developer has managed to create a franchise to rival Activision's Call of Duty. It's a blockbuster, a AAA game that has no rival. Call of Duty is heavily entrenched, so no rival, no matter how relevant, can achieve the status that it has. And their point is they don't want the Xbox deal necessarily to go through. That seems like what
they're basically saying, we are supporting you and you have a sizable player base here on PlayStation, so don't go
saying that if there's that whole thing that keeps doing the rounds as to whether if Xbox / Microsoft acquired Activision, they would have a monopoly on the industry. That's the whole thing that keeps doing doing the rounds. So Sony said this thing that Call of Duty is unrivaled. There's no way, you know, if that goes over there, then no one's going to buy a PlayStation anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Xbox then responded, which kind of the only way that they could, considering the context, saying there's nothing unique about the video games developed and published by Activision. None of these games are must-haves, which is phenomenal. Just having
what,
to completely
what a slam dunk. Imagine being Activision in the middle. It's just like, oh, like there's Sony.
Cheers,
big, and you'll be like, oh, we're masterclasses. We're leading this like a Renaissance painter. But then it's just almost like, nah, it's MS Paint, mate. Rubbish.
Anyone could do that.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Just pick up a gun. Like, it's just, yeah. So there's this weird sort of back and forth war going on. And so, yeah, Hugo Brandeo just says, what, like, WTF, which I just think it's so interesting. Part of me wonders if it's 4D chess on behalf of Sony trying to get Xbox to devalue the Call of Duty brand. I wonder if some financial analyst knew this is how they would have to respond. Because if they say, yes, we completely agree, and this is why we want the deal to go through, then they're almost admitting that they're buying into the idea of a monopoly
and
a value set in the industry that is unrivaled.
Now, this is where we enter into a very strange thing where, obviously, I totally understand why they put out that response of being like, look, we have to try and make it seem like we're not entering into this monopoly, like you said. But at the same time, why would they care? Like, no offense to them. If it was in that situation and it was me in there, I'd be like, yeah, I am. And what are you going to do about it? I am your competitor. I owe you nothing. I am going to take whatever financial advantages I can because this is business, my friend. And I will.
Well, that's
the cold, calculating truth of it. Because it's like, okay, they have a monopoly on it. It's not illegal to have a monopoly on video games. It is to have it with certain business practices, but you can't. It's not stopping anyone from entering through lack of resources or tech availability. It's just in terms of popularity, and that you can't control, surely.
True. Well, that's the thing. That's what keeps doing the rounds. And I don't have the notes in front of me, but there is that whole thing on whether the monopoly in entertainment would be considered illegal the same way it would be in other sectors. There's a whole thing about like the American entertainment industry and how there's been floated the idea that if this deal goes through, that they would have a monopoly on the industry. I'm sure most of that has gone through. That I keep seeing headlines saying that various parts of this deal are going through and that it's meant to be closing next year.
Right, okay.
So I think it's all just kind of various reverberations from that. But it was just a hilarious back and forth of like, well, you can't take that. We need that. But it's not worth anything. Don't worry about it.
But it's like, what's to stop Sony with all of their sort of like first party publishing access that they have from just going away and making their own thing and just saying like, look, as soon as you have exclusives, you're creating a monopoly on that. So it's just like, there's no difference like here, but they're just getting a bit sad about it. That it's just one of the biggest publishers going.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think the read, for my read on it, read between the lines, is them inferring that they can't let this deal go through.
Yeah.
And that's why they're begging up the value of Call of Duty. Maybe there's other reads to be taken from that. But yeah, overall, that was a hell of an exchange. And thank you to Hugo for pointing it out. Yeah. I forgot that thing happened earlier this week. Next question from Roy Mutombo-Turner, who says, this is for Jules. I just found a brand new Rabbids game in Asda the other day, but there's still no new Rayman. Are we living in a dystopian timeline and do I need to start building a time machine?
I genuinely hate what happened with the Rabbids, man. Like, it's like they came along.
But that's
like,
so cool.
Like, Rayman, no, don't do this to me, Scott. Like, we are friends.
I'm seeing you in person next week as well.
I will write you off the Christmas card list if you look me in the eye and tell me that the Rabbids are better than Rayman. Can you do that? You're looking away.
Maybe.
You're literally looking away right now.
I'm trying to think about it. I just thought of the games that they do. I might prefer the Rabbids games. Oh, the design.
Just the design.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
What? So you like
little quiffy Rayman? I don't know.
Rayman is the pinnacle of design because of the fact he's got no bones to weigh him down. Like, he's literally walking around with his hands and fists attached from his body. He's the simplest and therefore most aesthetically pleasing.
He's like Johnny Cash lyrics. And like, he's got no...
but like the those Rayman Legends and Rayman Origins games, you can't deny me that he's not a beautifully drawn character. He's so simple and silly. I love him. Rabbids, they look like sacks of flowers that have had the piss bean out of them. And then two eye holes punched in.
I think there's more malleability to the Rabbids. My whole thing with Rayman is that I never got over the no limbs thing. It's like why I don't think that like Miis look cute or anything. Like Nintendo Miis.
Yeah.
Like the whole idea of like floating limbs, it just doesn't do anything for me. So like if it's, I don't mind Rayman and those games are incredible. Like legit, like as platformers, they are better than most 2D Marios.
Thank you.
Like they're stellar. But Rayman as a character design, I don't know. I think that, like, overall, I would take a new Rayman game. But if we're talking about aesthetic, I might like the look of the Rabbids doing some stuff. Having a bit of a banter more than I want Rayman?
I'll just say to you, like, what's the best Rabbids game? Answer is, it's the XCOM ripoff. And therefore, yes, it's not Mario even like Rabbids. Their original thing. It's literally just ripping off another game.
Oh, no, the actual Rabbids games were terrible. Like, that's terrible. I used to have to sell them. Yeah.
So they've got to go. Basically, they are shovelware. And the worst thing is that I can't actually remember what came first. They're kind of like chicken and the meme scenario with like, was it the Minions or was it the Rabbids that came first?
Funnily enough, I've looked this up before because I thought the Rabbids were a ripoff of the Minions. They're not. The Rabbids predate the Minions.
So we have even more to hate them for.
Because as far as I know, I'm not sure if, I'm pretty sure about that. I've not looked it up in a long time, but I remember thinking that years ago and looking it up and realizing the Minions, the Rabbids came first. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they came first because they were in like something in 2006 or whatever, which I think predates Despicable Me.
Right, okay.
So, I think that was 2007. But similar energies,
They literally came along and they destroyed everything, is what I'm hearing, because they gave birth to the Minions. And now, unfortunately, that means that they've given birth to that subset of film fan who likes to, ironically, in heavy quotation marks, dress up as Gru or a Minion to go and watch the new Minions movie in the plight that they're saying, oh yeah, guys, I'm just watching this for the laugh. Isn't it so silly that I'm ironically doing it? No, mate. It's sad that you're sitting there looking at the screen and going, laughing along with a set of five-year-olds. Oh, he said the word banana.
I was just going to point out the banana joke. Now, have you seen the Minions movies?
Surprisingly, Scott, no.
Because I'm not going to get the costume on, but I'd had enough fun with the Minions movies. I didn't see The Rise of Gru.
What's enough fun? Give me a proper evaluation.
I did a little chortle. I thought the banana thing, I smiled a little bit at the banana thing. I didn't love it as much as Mark Kermode, veteran film critic Mark Kermode, who loves the Minions movies, did a whole speech in his review about how much they know what they are and how stellar they are, and the banana scene had him on the floor and everything. I wasn't that guy, but they were all right. Minions.
I exhale like a horse, mate. That's what I think.
Exhale in your general direction.
Okay,
next,
cool. Brilliant.
Question from Rich Roberts, who says, hello, fine fellows. Hope you're doing well. I don't know about you, but I can't help feeling that the reveal of GTA 6's location as Vice City is a bit boring. How do we stop this, and how do we get a remake of The Getaway? Happy gaming. I would take a release of The Getaway, just put it on the PlayStation Premium service. But what do you think of GTA going back to Vice City?
Just quickly to say that The Getaway is one of the undersung open world crime games going. It's gritty, it's very, very London-y, and I enjoyed the fact that it's a very minimalist approach to its hub.
Mark Hammond.
I just like the fact that, like, you know, it told you where to go with the blinkers on the indicators.
Cool.
I was like, there's such a simple solution to a problem of like dictating where the player should go, and now here you go with a little bit of
also, like, massively predates photogrammetry in terms of, like, as a graphical technique, like taking loads of photos and putting them on a wireframe mesh and making it look photoreal.
Yeah,
like, I remember seeing pictures of that, you know, at the very beginning of the PlayStation 2 and being like, holy S-words, this is photoreal. I love The Getaway. I think if you play it back now, it's quite hard and awkward because it predates most cover shooters. I love that thing. I love all the how ridiculously London it is, like Mark Hammond and Charlie and all that kind of stuff. But it was great.
You gotta get your son back.
And like, I never played all of Black Monday, but the sequel.
Apparently that was quite good. I didn't play that either.
I think you play as a boxer or something. At some point you can lamp a few Charlies, but I didn't do very much of it.
Lamp a few Charlies? What are you on, mate?
I'm not from London. I don't know what they do down there. Just get lamping.
So The Getaway, good. Yes. Also, GTA Vice City as a location being bad is quite the take. I'm not sure I've agreed with this this comment that it's a bad or disappointing one, because unless you're thinking that it's only going to be in terms of how small it was, nah, they're going to do the same sort of thing of, like, each one of these is probably going to be the size of Los Santos, which is obviously very, very big. I love the idea of going back to a area that we've already covered. Obviously, we did that with Liberty City, and it proved to be wonderful in GTA 4. Mm-hmm. And I just can't see it being bad, if I'm honest.
I think the go-to, if I'm going to assume stuff, I think that they are saying it's boring because it's like an expected location, because we've had, like, if you go back to the original GTA, it's like that set of San Andreas, Liberty City, Vice City, and then it was the 3D era across the 2000s. It was the same three locations.
Yep.
And then in the newest era, you've got the same stuff again. Like GTA 4 was Liberty City again, GTA 5 was San Andreas again, and so it's Vice City yet again. And so, like, I don't mind that. I like the idea of them doing like a way more realistic, way more weighty version of Vice City, more like GTA 5. But I guess if you want them to branch out and do something completely different than like GTA London or whatever, then
I'm just going to say that all it is a name. It's just a name. Like, you've got your three islands or your three distinct areas. They're all exactly the same in terms of what they offer the player. If you just called this, instead of Vice City, you called it like Trey Santiago, like, I don't know, right. like the city of Trey Santiago, then yeah, done. Would people be...
Do you not have a favorite aesthetic?
Or the 80s Vice City was my favorite setting for any GTA game because it was just so ridiculous. And I actually loved how small the map was in comparison to some of the later games, because blitzing it along there and getting from one side of the map to the other in like under 2 minutes was just hilarious fun.
That was that perfect meeting between like Liberty City and San Andreas, like in Vice, where they had like stunt ramps everywhere and different things that you could like get the bike and go to the airport and whatever. Yeah, I love Vice City. I love those old school GTAs. It's just sandboxes, there's play boxes. Play box a word as a play box.
Well, why not create it?
Exactly. I want them to do more stuff like that. So, I think that they're just kind of rounding stuff off. And this is the first big GTA, main GTA, without any of the initial creative staff. Like, I mean, Sam House is still there, but everyone else is gone. So, I'm interested about that. But, yeah, they need to show a lot more of it. The latest report said it wouldn't be coming till about 2025.
That's a long wait.
It's so long. Like, it's Rockstar themselves, quoted anonymously in that report, are aware of how long it's taken. And so, like, I think it's one of those things that they just need to get so right. But GTA 5 still sells so much. So they're not in any rush to do it.
No.
Next question from Bugan Hagendaz, who says, Nikkei says there will be no new Nintendo hardware this fiscal year. Is this the nail in the coffin for the Switch Pro, or do you think Nintendo are still likely to release another version before their next full console?
Well, I don't think so. They've already said that the reason that they didn't release the upgrade was because of the semi-capacitor shortage, wasn't it? That was like one of the main reasons.
That's the prevailing rumor. They've not officially stated that.
No, but there have been so many sort of, even the hardware outlets and manufacturers have said, yeah, this is actually the case. So
some people swore that they had the 4K Switch on hand.
Yeah, that was a bit of an odd one.
I'm sure that was the Jason Schreier thing, was he talked to, well, not him specifically, but he wrote up a whole thing about, the warehouse people on the front line and everything having the 4K Switch stuff and then it not being real. And then Nintendo going, that never existed. And it's like, well, it clearly did. That's clearly what you were going to.
I mean, why not just hold on to it and release it alongside your next console as maybe a companion? Because, you know, we were talking about before, what is going to be the next sort of leap for Nintendo? Because they love to approach their consoles with like a really interesting gimmick, or like it's got to have a central thing. I was thinking about this the other day. What if, like, you own your Switch, but it somehow integrates into this new console in a way that boosts the power or the capabilities of what it can do? So it's like it offers proper VR simulation if you've got the Switch plugged into it. So it's like you're almost buying it as a companion piece. And I know that a few people would probably be very against that idea because it's effectively buying two consoles to get one, the most out of one. But if you already own a Switch, and because the Switch is on track to become the biggest selling console ever,
still is right now. Well, I mean, right now it's the market leader.
Oh, well, there you go.
It's got quite a ways to beat the PS2, but it'll probably get there.
It's all about, I think, using your install base. And I was thinking this, like, what video game companies tend to do is they don't produce ethically or responsibly when it comes to manufacturing. They will just basically just chuck it out, and then your console is as good as next to nothing in a few years.
True.
Like, having some sort of like renewable or something that you can plug in to create more power. Like, I know that you might end up with like a Frankenstein sort of like console that's like, do you remember with the, what was it? Was the N64 had the double D expansion?
I was just going to say they like, kind of did this with the N64.
Why don't they do that again, but better? Like,
I think it'll be hard in terms of, because I was, when you described that, I was like, maybe they would do some sort of deluxe version of the dock. So you keep the Switch that you have, whether it's the original or the OLED or whatever, and you put that into the dock, and then that's some, I don't know, like, I don't know enough about computers and computing to know that you could just dock something to give it more power. But I know that they did, because the N64 thing was just like a memory card, but then some games could take advantage of it for load times, and some of them needed it to run as well. So maybe they can work it in that way, where like a game that's struggling for more RAM can just get
in,
it from
there. In PC, for example, you've got like a term called crossfire, I think it's, where you've got two graphics cards and they basically help each other out, and then you've got ways that you can utilize two PCs together to like lower rending time, like for edits and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So what you could do is potentially have the dock be itself no screen but all hardware, and when you mm-hmm. plug the Switch into it, it then boosts it to 4K. It gives it that capability. It gives it cool. like supreme functionality that will let you run not only the games you've already got there at mm-hmm. like unlocked potential, but also new games coming on it. That's how you play it as well.
That's a good shout. I think just knowing Nintendo and how incredibly money grubby they are, I think they'll just do a full on 400 quid whatever Switch 4K Super Nintendo Switch type thing, because that's their biggest unit cost. But I like the idea of them respecting the consumer more and sort of bolting yeah. stuff on better, but not ever in Nintendo history have they ever put the consumer first. So I don't think they're going to start now, but like, we can live in hope. Next.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Question from the Irish Patriot, who says, "Hello, legends. Who are your favorite comedians?"
Ooh, great question, Ooh. Actually. Don't really get to talk about this. Who are my favorite comedians? I would say that I do classify him as a comedian still. Ethan Klein from H3H3. I do enjoy listening to his podcasts, even though he's quite inflammatory from time to time. So I do enjoy like that he's just speaking his mind and doing lots of weird comedy
bits. I think I know who that guy is. I'm pretty sure he, because I'm going to say Bill Burr. He's my absolute favorite goat. And so I think Klein interviewed Bill Burr. I think that's a crossover.
In fact, I'm pretty sure they had a very rocky interview where where Bill Burr basically just ripped into him.
Because Klein kept asking questions that he did. Bill was like, "I don't want to talk about where my wife lives or whatever." And then it got really awkward. They did did another interview to patch that stuff up. But yeah, their first one is very awkward. It's still on YouTube as well.
It's so funny, man. I'm trying to think of like other comedians that I would listen to on the reg. I know that Kerry listens to my long-suffering girlfriend, by the way, listens to a podcast called All Filler, No Killer, which has got two female comedians, Kerry Pritchard-McLean and Rachel Fairbairn. They are incredibly funny, and the podcast is all about looking at serial killers, but doing so with a lens of their very... it's not satirical, what's the word I'm looking for, where it's like Jack D, what's that word, sarcastic edge sort of, to it, like dry humor, and it's really
dry funny. Is the good word for it. I am there's not actually, because like Bill Burr, like I said, is my go. I used to be a big Louis CK fan years ago, but I started before all that stuff happened, like what the special he did before then wasn't that good anyway. But yeah, my go-to is definitely Bill Burr. Watched a lot of Gervais over the years, but I feel like he's dropped off quite a lot as well. I feel like he had that really cool hot streak where it was like animals all the way through to the Fame Tour, like the first three.
Yeah, and then just public opinion shifted on him, didn't it?
A little bit, yeah. I don't necessarily mind the public opinion necessarily, but it's just the actual material. I don't think he's really doing anything or saying anything that's that good. Like, it's like anyone can just point at a subject matter and make the worst possible joke about it. Like, there's not that much construction there.
Although, so, I will say that I think that the Ricky Gervais show, the animated series that he did with Carl Pilkington and Stephen Merchant, there he is. Like, that was hilarious. I think the animations of that was just brilliant.
Yeah, because they're all taken from the old radio shows. Like, they just took their old audio and some of the old podcasts too, and then animated it. Yeah. I was listening to that last night.
I've never listened to that podcast or that radio show that they did back then. Really? Is it actually worth revisiting?
Oh, mate, it's brilliant. Like, yeah, I mean, the whole story of that thing was that Gervais had landed the gig at XFM, and he was looking through a pile of CVs for someone to be an assistant or something, and he saw Merchant's credentials or whatever, and just was like, yeah, I'll get him, whatever, that guy'll probably carry me through it because he's clearly a very professional person on paper. And their chemistry just sort of came together quite happenstance. And then they discovered or whatever Pilkington as a producer at the time, and then just started doing stuff together. So their old XFM shows are them just figuring out what Carl's like and asking him stuff, and he gets on the shows more and everything. Yeah, all those old podcasts or radio shows are all just on YouTube. They tend to get re-uploaded by someone every now and then because the copyright occasionally comes back around. But yeah, I don't really have, in terms of watching a stand-up today, like I said, I'll watch loads of Bill Burr. I used to love Peter Kay. I feel like there hasn't been that many great stand-ups recently. Chappelle, I go back and forward on. Like, it depends on his stand-up. I like listening to him in interviews more than his stand-up. But yeah,
I personally like with Chappelle stuff, obviously some of his takes are rancid. So for me, it's a case of scorched earth, I guess. But I do enjoy Stuart Lee, and I do enjoy Ross Noble as well. I think that they are.
Oh my God, Ross Noble! I met him. I did it.
That thing he's so funny, and I love. Do you know what? I respect him probably more so than many other comedians out there, because while having a fantastic set is it will mean that you go down in the annals of history as being a great comedian. I think it takes much more courage and skill to be able to go out on stage with no plan whatsoever. And he did a series of tours where he went up there and only had, I think he said, he had one joke at the beginning and one joke at the end, and everything else just trying to stitch it together from there. And it's like, oh man, I can't imagine doing that. I mean, if I don't script stuff down to the absolute letter, I panic that I'm going to miss my points, because I always stutter and I roll over my words too much as it is. So to do that for a living in front of people who, let's face it, are always sitting there with a little bit of jaded nature, because they're like,
yeah, they need to be convinced.
Entertain me, funny man. Yeah. I'm like, oh my Lord, no.
Oh no, definitely. I remember seeing him on the, I think it was the Randomist tour for Noble back in the day.
That might have been the Randomist tour, actually.
So good. I mean, they're all improvised. That used to always be his thing.
Oh, was that his entire thing? I thought there was just one tour that he did.
I think he maybe slowly started bringing it together a bit more, but I remember that whole rise that he had across the 2000s. It was all improvised. I was trying to think, because I was thinking of Bill Burr, and then I was like, who else am I go-to? Who else am I absolute top tier? It's Chris Rock. Like, Chris Rock's the dude that I just grew up watching his Bring the Pain tour when he took a few years off and he came back, and the Bring the Pain stuff is great. The Never Scared tour, Tambourine is brilliant over on Netflix. Chris Rock and Bill Burr are my top two. I just when someone's so obvious that you just don't even think of them for a second, and it's like, no, of course they're one of the pillars.
I'd also be remiss to not give him a shout out, seeing as we've actually got the opportunity now. John Robertson, who runs the Dark Room. We've met him a few times. He's a very good friend. He plays D&D with me occasionally over on Little Let's Dice. Lovely guy. And his stand-up sets, because they are infused with the Dark Room, which, if you guys haven't seen it before, it's a choose your own adventure show in which you are playing, but every single result leads you to your death and you die. And it's just really funny, because it's like you're playing through this. Like, he's effectively played the same game with people for, I don't know, 5-6 years, and yet people still flock to it to play it together. And it's just this beautiful family of people just yelling, you die, you die, you die, over and over again.
No, he always seems to have awesome energy. I've not met him in person, but I've seen you do plenty of stuff with him, and he always seemed really cool.
I think that there's one more that I want to give a shout out just quickly before we go on. Is Phoebe Waller-Bridge. It's just absolutely hilarious, just brilliant.
Next question from Jack Asbury, who says, hi lads, have you ever anticipated a game, highly anticipated a game, and it comes out and no one is talking talking about it. Digimon Survive just came out, but it was the same day as Xenoblade Chronicles 3. So naturally, all the coverage has gone to that. Now, I saw someone else messaged us in the question thread saying that Digimon Survive has been review bombed. I don't know why. The critic reviews are quite solid for it.
Oh, really?
But at the same time, I've not thought of Digimon in about 18 years. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know what that fandom is doing right now. But yeah, there's a new Digimon. It's a turn-based XCOM type thing.
Well, yeah. You say that, but it's also got loads of other elements that seem to be just sort of like chasing trends instead of leading them. I was a bit
maybe it's monetized or whatever.
I was like, I'm not entirely sure what I think about this game. But
if I talk about an anticipated game that came out and then no one talked about it, probably Stray or Ghostwire Tokyo, just like the two, or maybe even Deathloop to some degree, like mostly Ghostwire and mostly Stray. They just sort of dropped this year and people went, yep, okay, yeah. Kind of.
It's a shame, isn't it? Because sometimes you get good games that come out and just get buried under loads of other brilliant releases. And sometimes they come out with no competition and just still nobody buys them. Like Carrie and I are starting to play through Stray now. And we're loving it, but it was like hot for a minute and now no one's talking about it.
Well, that's the thing. Like what I mean by Stray, I mean the Ghostwire Tokyo just had nothing at all. Its sales completely undercut and it just didn't land. Stray obviously had a bit of burst on social media, but it was all cats watching people play Stray. It was not anything to do with the gameplay. And for me personally, I thought Stray was a massive disappointment. I thought it played really boring. It sent me to sleep. I was just like, running around looking for the X prompt over and over again.
Yeah, but we're enjoying that because Kerry isn't like a massive gamer, so this is a really nice sort of entry point where we're just like sitting down and playing this together, like solving the like pretty simple puzzles. But it's just the joy of playing is something
it is
like
nice.
A cat. Like it is nice, and I love the aesthetics as well, the design. Yeah, of the sort I think of, like Dead City and stuff like that. That's great.
Yeah, I think it does look gorgeous. I wish they did a bit more with it. I think by the time you get to the end, it's like, oh, okay. That
right,
didn't really,
okay.
That was just a thing. Like, it's only 4 hours long anyway.
Yeah,
but,
true.
But yeah, I think that would be my one. Have you got anything that you were anticipating and then it was just like...
Oh. Yes. Oh, yeah, 100%. It wasn't necessarily disappointment. It was because of the fact that nobody bar Josh and I played it. And that was the Mad Max game that came out ages ago.
Oh, dude, like, I love the Mad Max game.
Oh, yeah. Actually, you were on board with it as well. But I think that it was us three and everyone we spoke to was like, there's a Mad Max game out? Like, what are you on about? Yeah. Sort of thing. I was like, yes. And it's got nothing to do with the film. But at the same time, kind of does. But it's brilliant. And loads of people didn't even want it to come out because the developers and publishers were like at odds with each other all the time. And then it got removed from storefronts. And then it came back again. And because of all of this absolute mess, by the time that it finally came out, it was chucked on sale, buried under a load of other titles released around the same time.
Same day as Metal Gear Solid 5.
Metal Gear Solid 5. I mean, how were you going to compete with that? In fact, the only reason that I picked it up is because of the fact I wasn't actually a huge fan of Metal Gear Solid 5 because I was waiting for you to tell me whether it was worth getting or not. So I was just basically like, oh, I'll get the other game that's coming out instead.
Yeah. No, I love Mad Max. I went back to that last year because it has an Xbox Series patch that makes it like 4K 120 frames a second. So I was like,
The dust storms roll in, I imagine with that upgrade, it's just like, oh, yes, mate.
We did, because of that game and because of Just Cause 4, we did like the best storms in gaming, which didn't do that well on the channel.
Yeah, true, I remember that.
Just trying to like show off how incredible Mad Max looks. But yeah, definitely those two. Next question from Harry Paulette, who says, what is your dream download festival lineup? Now, you can go into resurrecting people if you want, or you can go with who would you combine now?
I mean, that's so tough because it's like my music taste is eclectic, to say the least, as I'm sure yours is as well. as long as it's set around 2003, right?
Hey, 2004 is when they formed. Sorry, mate. When Alter Bridge arrived.
Trying to pick up the best download lineup. Are we just picking like a headliner and a couple of supporting acts, or like what's the gimmick here?
I think you go with, like, if it's Dream Festival lineup, then maybe you go your three headliners. And then, like, I guess who else you would want to see across the show.
So I'm going to pick a band that is insanely popular, never got to see live, but think that they are near flawless. I'm going to pick a band that nobody is listening to in this day and age, who I think are just hilariously fun. And then I will pick one that is, like, my personal, I just love everything that they've done. Wouldn't say that they're flawless, but that. So my three are the Gorillaz. I would absolutely love to see them live.
Nice little Friday band as well.
Well, with all of the 3D effects, the holograms, like all of the craziness, like I go back through their back catalog. They have got so many bangers throughout all of their albums, and it's just Damien evolving. It's just fantastic.
I think with download stuff, there's an assumption that it has to be heavy, but download themselves have had chasing status there before, and they did do the Prodigy. It's like they do have a bit of a window for, like, if something's big enough and good enough, it can fit there.
Yeah, like, I'm not vibing on the whole thing of just going in for something heavy here. I'm just going for a band I desperately would like to see before I die. Then I would go for the band that nobody's listening to in this day and age, Most Precious Blood, just because I'd want them to play their album Merciless. All the way through. If you've not heard it, it is basically like the birth of modern hardcore. In my opinion, there will probably be audio files that'll be able to tell me that there was a band who did it maybe 3 or 4 years earlier than that. But this exploded onto the scene when I was in my youth, basically, and was just like, ooh, I've not heard anything this punky but also this heavy before, so I was loving it. And then I would like to have Thrice play because I just love Thrice. I think they're great. It's really nice.
I keep hearing Thrice get recommended on almost a weekly basis,
probably by me.
I always probably by you, and I always forget to go and actually put them on, so I need to check out the old Thrice. For me, I'm thinking like festival vibes, big like stupid sound systems and getting people moving and everything. I would open the Friday on a big old synthwave fest. I would have Carpenter Brute headline, and I think the sheer curiosity of who the hell is Carpenter Brute would get people involved. And you have his like synthwave takes on the likes of Maniac. There's a really good cover of that. And I think if you just listen to things like Roller Mobster or Meat Matt Striker or whatever, there's a good, like, I've seen Carpenter Brute live. He does heavy metal synthwave stuff so well, and he's like a leader in the field of synthwave music. I think you open the Friday on that. Everyone has a bit of a dance and everything else. Saturday I would give to Trivium. They never got their headline slot. Fair. And I just was thinking of like vintage bands that you could give the next level to, and you can argue the Trivium have missed their slot. I don't necessarily think they have. I think they're on the form of their careers. I think they had a weird album with the Catastrophist stuff, whatever that album was called, and then the one that they came back with was just as good as The Sin and the Sentence.
It was really weird, isn't it, that they had such a long break, came back with two albums near back to back, it felt.
Just because of the pandemic. That one at the beginning didn't go down. Me, you, and Andy Murray listened to the Catastrophist song.
Yeah, and there was elements that we did like. Okay. But then it was like, that's the thing, it's the choruses. They do seem that they were the lightest that Trivium had ever been. And that's why we liked them. And
I always feel like Trivium go like one for you, one for us kind of thing. One really good, one that's all like really tightly recorded and everything. And then one that tries to get more radio play. And sometimes the radio ones fall down. Like the David Draiman produced one. Vengeance Falls was such a mixed bag. But anyway, the album they did to apologize for whatever, I can't think of what that album's called, the NAF one from 2020. Just not to insult the man too much, that album grew on me a lot, but initially
Matt, if
it was
he's
like,
listening to this, just be like, oh come
he's
on,
checking
Scott,
it out, going, oh god, lads,
I thought we were dudes, mate.
I thought we were friends. And but yeah, that album, they clearly wanted to do something to make up for that. So In the Court of the Dragon is very much up there with The Sin and the Sentence, which is some of the best stuff they've ever made, some of the best metal you could ever hear. And I think you give them the headline slot and you let people just go and see them and finally have that headline slot they should have had back in the day, after In Waves, which got completely undercut. Undercut by the Crusade. And then on the Sunday, I'm just giving it to Electric Callboy. They've got like 4 songs, but they're all incredible. And they're just like, go listen to Electric Callboy. We Got the Moves is unbelievably huge. And you give it to them. You get that they'll absolutely dominate. They're just like a German hardcore band and they are phenomenal.
Amazing.
Give it to them. Final question from Morgan Eyes Only, who says, what would it take for a game like The Avengers to come back, in your opinion? Is it a complete lost cause?
No, actually, I don't think it's a lost cause, because when I played this game at a closed doors event at EGX, 2 or 3 years ago, had the time of my life, because you got to play as Ms. Marvel and smashing people around in some sort of like weird training room, and I actually really enjoyed the combat.
Okay.
All they'd need to do is rebalance it and readdress the state of what it is. The content expansion that have come out, I've actually been keeping an eye on them. They have been reviewed and been received by the fan base a lot better than the initial launch. It's just the damage was done by the ultimate nature of the grind, and unfortunately it was exacerbated when the developers put a patch out that made things more grindy, because they hadn't finished developing the end game content yet, so they had to basically slow players down. I feel like now they can be in a much more relaxed state to award players for their time and investment much better. So I would say remove all of the nerfs that they put in, make people feel like the overpowered superheroes that they are, turn down the enemy damage in Bullet Sponge thing, because there are still some enemies out there that are taking, you know, a massive like shield to the face from Captain America and just going like, oh, sorry, did you sneeze on me?
Like, or like Hulk hits a regular soldier. Yeah. And he's like, okay.
Like all they've got to do is address that sort of thing of like, yeah. You can have like the giant mechanical enemies take a few more hits because obviously they are designed to be a challenge. Mm-hmm. But regular grunts, I want them swept away like the Dynasty Warriors games here. But I want to just obliterate people. Like,
yeah, if they could differentiate the characters more. Yeah. I think there's a few fundamental issues with it, but I think if you make it free to play, that would help. There was a time where it was on PlayStation Plus or Game Pass for a bit, and the player numbers spiked for a bit. And it's like, if you just get it in front of people and get them playing those first few levels, my issue is kind of with the level design itself. It felt like every character worked in every single level, so they weren't differentiable. But if it did things like what you said, if you tweak the balancing and you make it so that Hulk feels like Hulk and not just a bigger version of Cap or whatever, then you can do things like that. And maybe just put one of the levels out from about the midpoint where the gang is actually getting back together. Yeah. Like I like the thing where Nolan North's Tony Stark and Troy Baker's Bruce Banner start working together again. Like the whole story is that they're all disparate and everything. I think the thing that they're up against is just the massive superhero fatigue that everyone has right now, like Marvel fatigue.
And it also really doesn't help that Guardians of the Galaxy came out and told a lot more of an earnest tale because of the fact that it was like, hey, we're not trying to do this microtransaction, loot grindy stuff. We're just telling a single player story and there's nothing else to it. And I was like,
Guardians is like,
dude, this is
so
brilliant.
Good.
This is like, because do you know what? Isolated, it's not even that good a game if we're being brutally
honest.
The combat's
not great.
It's a good game, but when you put it next to the sheer vacuum of fun that was Avengers at that time, then it appears to be the shining gem even more. So make it more like Guardians of the Galaxy, please, but with arguably Marvel's Avengers combat, but with the caveat of less bullet spongy enemies, please.
Yeah, I think as well, you open up some of the abilities that you get like an hour or 2 hours in, like you make it so the combat doesn't feel like you're just hitting the same button over and over again. There's a lot of stuff you'd have to do to it, but there is a core to it that had a lot of money thrown at it that is worth polishing up. Just massive shout out to Guardians as well. Like you said, that game's combat is not great, but the character writing for me, I think, is some of the best since Mass Effect 2, so I will shout that stuff out. Overall though, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions. I forget what I say at this point, like I always do every single week.
Well, you should tell people that next Thursday we'll be putting out a tweet so that they can check in and ask us questions for next week's UBP. And just a little side note, I know that there are a few people saying hashtag where are the mugs. The mugs are apparently coming, but there's been quite a lot of busy work going on in What Culture recently. In fact, it might be the case that Scott and I will be recording in the same location together next week, which will be an interesting one. But it all depends on how much we can do shuffling stuff around.
But in terms of the mugs, we've set those things in motion. We keep checking in with them. We just don't have any update other than they're coming. So it's just... hopefully the mugs arrive at some point.
I mean, it's the problem working for a mega company like Future Publishing, really, isn't it? Because it's like, surprisingly, if you go up to them and be like, excuse me, we have a real mug problem here. And they just respond with, yeah, but the entire sort of West Coast advertising division is on fire at the moment. So thanks.
They've got a few things going on. But for now, this has been the Untitled Battle Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
A massive thank you to all of you for sending in your questions. And we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.